So yeah, so I think the November course is still, how many days left to the 11th? Yeah. 11th. So today we are on the 7th. By the way, if you're wondering what the monks were doing today before, they're reciting Mitsama. It's Lama Tsongkhapa's mantra. So they're doing the Kora, circumambulation around the monastery, reciting the mantra, because tomorrow is Lama Tsongkhapa's day. Lama Tsongkhapa is the very beautiful statue we have up here. It represents Lama Tsongkhapa, of course. He's the founder of the Gelugpa tradition. And yeah, he's an amazing practitioner, amazing. So yeah, tomorrow is Lama Tsongkhapa day. And tomorrow I think all of you will go to Bodha. So make sure you make your wish, or wishes. I remember when I was a kid, I used to think, what's the best wish one can make? And I kind of really racked my brains, and I came to the conclusion, the best wish is to wish to have infinite wishes. So maybe that's a good thing, yeah. So you can wish to have infinite wishes, and then you can wish all the wishes you want. Which ultimately you don't really need anything else. We have that potential, we have that possibility. You know, the power of the mind, the power of the individual is so powerful that if we are able to focus and really feel that we need that, we can make it happen. Whether there's a stupa or not. But of course, the stupa will help a lot. Because the faith comes out, and the faith from everybody else, which affects the collective memory, and then that helps the wish to become true more fast or more strong. So, I have here many questions. I don't know whether I should go through them or not. I don't know, maybe you prefer using the microphone? Or maybe you prefer me to read these questions and answer them? I don't know, maybe we can have a vote? I don't know, or maybe Venerable Gyatso can decide. Should I answer these questions or should we send a microphone? From the audience? Or... from the audience? Okay, so let's just make it short. Yeah, I'll just pick some here. But these questions are very complicated because I think the people thought a lot before, so they... so it's tricky questions. I don't know which one to choose. Okay, so let's just do, it says questions for us. Number one. And I think this is a good question because this way I can share a little bit of myself, you know, because I think it's not, you know, it's not nice. I'm just talking, but I'm, you know, you don't really know who I am or what I'm doing or anything. So I think that's important, you know, to share also from my side. So anyway, so the question goes, are you planning on taking on students or leading retreats in the future? I don't have many plans for the future. I try to keep it maybe 3 months ahead, maximum. So after 3 months, I don't really know what I'll be doing. But one of the thoughts that I have is maybe for the next November course, if I can really get a deeper understanding of the Lam Rim, which is what I'm going to do after Kathmandu. I'm going to India, to the monastery, to Sera Monastery. And Lama Zopa, he said that I should study the Lam Rim for my teacher in Sera. So that's what I'm going to be doing in the next couple of months. So if I'm able to get a little bit of deeper understanding of the Lam Rim, then maybe for the next November course, I can try to, you know, give some insight or understanding or my thoughts or whatever you want to call it, you know, together with Venerable Gyatso and whoever will be teaching for the next November course. So that's my wish, maybe. So for me, it's very auspicious to be able to be here and talking with all of you because it's the first time, you know, in the November course. And I think all FPMT started from the November course. So it's really special and historical, for me at least. So I just want to thank you being able to make this opportunity, this moment, to a reality. Because without you, then I'll just be talking to myself right now. So the number two, leading retreats. I don't know if I can really lead retreats, because technically I'm not a Buddhist yet. I'm in the process of becoming a Buddhist, and I have a hard time meditating. So, so I don't know. Maybe in the future, maybe. But I think I'll probably follow a retreat in any case. I don't think I'll be leading retreat. But maybe, I don't know, who knows. So number two, what are your goals and dreams besides enlightenment, in case that tops the list? enlightenment, that's so far away. But I guess that's the main objective, right? To become enlightened, to help other people become enlightened. But for me, that's so far away, I never really think about it. My goals and dreams. I think basically my goal is to be a better person every day. Try to go through what I've done in the end of the day. When I go to sleep, try to think about all my actions. And try to see what I did wrong, or what I don't feel comfortable with by following my moral code. Be a better person. Basically, it's being a better person for myself and for other people. You have to take care of yourself before you can take care of other people. So you start with yourself always. And my dreams, I have many dreams, like everybody. But my dream is just to be able to help Lama Zopa and maybe take some weight away from him so that he can relax. And I think basically that's the main reason why I was born, and why in this life I've had this opportunity of being in this situation. So if I don't take advantage of that situation, or don't do what I should do or would be good to do, then probably later on I'll regret a lot. I won't be able to feel good with myself. So basically, I think it's my job. Maybe job is not the right word. It's my responsibility, maybe. I don't know. But anyways, it's just, that's my dream, is to be able to do what Lama Zopa would like me to do in order to help people. But basically, my dream is to be able to reach people who are not Buddhist and introduce them to Buddhism. Because I think they are the people who need the most help. People who do not have any contact with Buddhism. People who would never pick up a Buddhist book or go to any meditation course, or would even listen to teachings, or even just because it has the name of religion, and they're like, oh no, I don't want to know anything about that. I think mainly my dream is to be able to reach those people and to be able to give them a small taste of what Buddhism can be, and then introduce them to Buddhism and help them in that way. I think that's mainly my dream. That's one of the reasons why I chose audiovisual techniques, making films and stuff like that, because you have the power of sound, speech, you can condense any messages there, you can put music, you can give images. Now I'm concentrating on documentaries. Maybe one day I'll make a Hollywood action film. Like The Matrix. That's such an amazing film, huh? Wow. Something like that would be amazing, But I think I'm very far away from that yet. But anyways, tomorrow there'll be a screening of the new official film, the first official film I did, together with Matteo Passigato. He's a very good friend of mine from Italy. I met him in 1998 in Bulgaria, and ever since then we've been in contact. So we did this documentary together, and it was produced by FDCW, which is Foundation for Developing Wisdom and Compassion. And the documentary is about universal education which is what La Mayesha started in the 1970s, and now it's actually really happening. So basically it's just a documentary as an introduction to that. So yeah, I don't want to go much in detail because I'll do the presentation tomorrow, but just try not to miss it. If you're interested, please come. I don't know what time, I think it's at 5? 3:30. Oh, 3:30. Oh, good thing it's, I didn't say 5. 3:30, you're sure, yeah? Okay. So 3:30, not 5. yeah, maybe 5 is Spanish time. 2 hours late. 3:30. So, join my Facebook page. Just kidding. So thank you so much. I don't know, maybe I should do more questions. I don't know, it's already 9, almost 15, so maybe we'll just leave it there. Sorry?
Keep going.
Okay. More questions. Do you at some point in the future intend to officially start giving teachings plus talking on students or taking on students? I don't know about teachings. I don't feel very comfortable with that word. But yeah, for sure, I'll definitely share my experiences and my thoughts and try to help people by doing that, you know, which is what I'm doing right now. I'm just sharing my humble, small thoughts. That's one of the reasons why I don't feel comfortable sitting on a throne, is because I like to be at the same level of everybody, because I don't want you to see me as a guru or anything, you know. I just want you to see me as a friend, you know, as somebody you can talk to, you know, somebody you can really relate to. So that's mainly the reason why, this is why I feel the most comfortable. Not on a throne. I will never sit on a throne, probably. Or never say never, right? Justin Bieber. Maybe, I don't know, anyways, yeah, so. And yeah, taking on students, I don't know about students, but of course I hope I'll have many friends like you. So just think of me as a friend, okay? So will you do you plan on taking over the lead at Copan? I don't know about lead, but I'm just the small potato, you know. I'm just somebody who just walks around and, you know, just listens to gossip, talks with people, have some tea somewhere, some coffee in the coffee shop. That's it. Nothing else. I'm not the leader, you know. It's not like that. You know, the leader is Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and you know, basically I'm just a follower. You know, I just follow. So I don't have any plan to take over and lead in Copan or anything like that. No. I'm just visiting Copan, it's my home, you know, so just love being here and just enjoy being here and sharing with everybody and, you know, talking and seeing people. That's basically what I want to do in Copan. Nothing else. What are your close future projects? My close future projects. So basically, after this documentary, one of the things, the two basic things I want to do, one is to study a little bit more. Maybe do some, like, communications, maybe economy or leadership, maybe a little bit. Even though I just said I don't want to be a leader, but I think it's important to learn about leadership in order to work in an organization like the FPMT. So one of the plans I have is to study that for the next 2 years. The other plan is, after this documentary, maybe to create another documentary, because this one is just 15 minutes long. But the next one, it may be 1 hour. And basically, it's about emptiness or spirituality, together with like quantum physics and science coming together. So the people who don't believe in spirituality, or, you know, then really 100% scientists, they can see, wow, maybe spirituality has something to do with science. Maybe it's the same thing. Because emptiness and quantum mechanics or quantum physics really blend together. You know, you can really see how the principle is the same, you know, the way they explain. So I don't know much about it yet, but I really want to investigate and learn about that and make a documentary. So that's the other project I'm trying to do. So yeah, I welcome any help, any information, any suggestions from people. So those are basically the two projects. I don't want to have any more projects because then it just becomes very vague. So just focus on those two for now. Yeah, so that's more questions. One question here is, also, are there any changes that you would like to happen in the monastic education for Tibetan Buddhist monks and nuns? I don't feel there's any changes needed because the way the system works is very, very, very good. You know, it's based on how it's been working for a long time and it's always worked very well. But I think one of the things that I would like there to be is some exercise. Some, maybe not sports because that's very competitive, but at least like some stretching exercise or maybe even yoga or some kind of exercise like that, because the monks many times they sit for a long time during the daytime, and then if you don't do exercise, then it can create back problems. It can be very unhealthy. So that's one of the changes I would like, you know, from in monastic system. Like Thich Nhat Hanh in his monastery, the monks do exercise every day, stretching exercises. They even play music, which is hard to believe, but it's true. I learned that last month. You know, they have this special time, free time, you know, where they can actually play music. And they're violinists, and pianists, and whatever. And it's beautiful music, it's like an orchestra. So, I mean, that for me, that was very surprising that monks were playing music in the monastery. Wow. But of course, it's a different type of tradition. It's based on Buddhism, but it's just different ways of seeing it, you know. So, for different people, different things work. But I thought that was very interesting, you know. So it doesn't mean that I want monks to play music here, of course. I think the exercise part is the part that I'm talking about. Don't misunderstand me. It doesn't mean like tomorrow we're going to bring a band here and play rock and roll music in a concert in the Gompa or something like that. No, no. For rock and roll, you go outside of the monastery. Okay, so more questions. Let's see. So one question, I think maybe this last question. Dear Osalhita, in your recent talk you said that when you were younger you had difficulties coming to terms with your situation in life and relating to happiness. Are you happy now? If so, what changed? Am I happy? I don't know. Happy is the concept, right? So it's not like, oh, I'm happy because tomorrow I may not be happy, so then I was not really happy. No. So it doesn't really make sense to say, oh yes, I'm happy, because tomorrow I may be crying. So then I wasn't happy, right? Because I'm crying afterwards. So where's the happiness? I think, yeah, so happiness is for me, it's easier to tackle on, like the other day I said, by thinking not being unhappy. So I'm not unhappy, that's for sure. You know, so that could be, in a way, I could say I'm happy. Yeah. But happiness as a concept everyone's looking for, that concept is very difficult to find. It's not something you go afterwards. You know, like it's a little bit like the donkey going behind the carrot. And the carrot is the guy with a stick, and the carrot is hanging, so the donkey's going behind the carrot, but he never really reaches the carrot. So if we think about happiness in the way that many people think, like especially in society, oh, you know, like I'll be happy when I have this house. Well, you know, materialistic point of view, then that happiness is impossible. You'll always be searching, going after something, which will never happen, because actually that will create more suffering. Won't create the happiness. So anyway, so am I happy now? I can say I'm happy for sure because I'm not unhappy, right? But not the happiness that, you know, people talk about. So it's maybe there should be two words, I don't know, like for love also. should be different words, like unconditional love, maybe unconditional happiness, we can call it. So I'm not unconditionally happy, but I am happy. Yes. So what changed? I think what changed is basically the perception I had of why I was suffering. I was suffering because I believed I was suffering. Mentally. And the change really was that I realized that I was suffering because I wanted to suffer. Because of my ego. It was me who was thinking about myself, saying, oh, poor me, and this and that and blah, 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 blah. And then I was suffering because of that. So I still suffer, of course, because every day is a different day, and we die when we go to sleep, and we're reborn when we are born, when we get up in the day, in the morning time. It's like being reborn again. And every day is different, so you never really know what's going to happen, or every day can be different, you know, like things can happen that make you unhappy or make you suffer. But like suffering as a state of mind, I don't suffer as much anymore because I really try to see the root of that suffering. And that came from my ego. From me saying, oh, me, 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 me. And then that's something that Eckhart Tolle talks about. He says, in Spanish they say, cuerpo dolor. I don't know how to say it in English. Pain body, yeah. So that's a little bit kind of the same thing, you know. It's like we create the suffering from our ego because we always think about ourselves, and then that increments that suffering. So I think that's one of the things that changed was that I read Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now. I read that, and that helped me a lot to see that, you know, to change that. So that was one of the things that helped me not to be so unhappy. And yeah, so maybe I hope that answered the question. Didn't make too much confusion. So maybe now we can just do some answers, question and answer from with the microphone. Just in case there's some misunderstandings, someone wants to... We don't want to take too long. It's 9:22 right now. Okay, so yeah. Anyways, today is vacation, so you're more relaxed. Yeah. No precepts. You have dinner today? Good, good, good. So, yeah, you're not grumpy. I get so grumpy when I don't eat. Wow. Like, if I've got an empty stomach, then, you know, try not to talk with me because I'll be very grumpy. How do you know if my stomach is empty, though? Good question, though. Then you can listen to my stomach. It makes noise and keep the distance. Just joking. So, questions?
So, you mentioned in your last talk and then also in this talk, mm-hmm. an idea of collective consciousness. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what would be your kind of interpretation of what that means, and how would it fit into a Buddhist framework, if it does?
Good question. Maybe you can think of it like karma also, you know, collective memory. It's like something, like, because karma, there's many different types of karma. There's a karma that is connected with all of us. Like right now, there's a karma that has made all of us share this room. So that can be also a like result from the collective memory. I don't know. Could be. The collective memory, from my point of view, is like it's like the 100 monkey syndrome. Did I talk about that last time? No. This experiment that they did about many different monkeys in different islands, and then all the monkeys, they would give them like sweet potatoes. So they would wet the potatoes in the water and then they would throw it on the sand, and the monkeys would eat it with sand. So it would be very crunchy and very uncomfortable. But they would eat it anyways because it was delicious and they liked it very much. But of course it's not nice to eat with sand. So one day one monkey discovered that if he washed the potato with water, then he didn't have that crunchiness anymore. So he showed it to other monkeys also. Then slowly, slowly, like the whole community in that island started to wash the potatoes with water. And when around, I think 100 monkeys around started doing that, then suddenly all the monkeys in all the islands started doing that too at the same time. And there wasn't any real connection between, because it's different islands. So I think that's a pretty good example for collective memory. It's like maybe when a certain number of that same species reaches a certain realization, then it helps everybody else to reach that. That's why it's so important to focus on the individual, because as we practice, the more we practice, the more realization we get, the more it affects the collective memory, which eventually will affect the people, the humanity also. So that's why we can really make a difference in that way. That's why it's so important to really practice hard in order to help other sentient beings. It's not like, if I'm a good person, I'll be able to help the other person on the other side of the world because I'll go to Africa. No, it's like we will be able to help the other person on the other side of the world through the collective memory. You know, thinking that way, then the motivation is even easier to keep that motivation, you know. So it's a good idea to think about the collective memory in the same way also our negative thoughts affect the collective memory, you know. So maybe that answered your question a little bit. That's okay, that's only your ego.
Yeah. I know, I'm an English speaker, so. We learn about the mind in the Tibetan course, about the power of the mind. And it's not about love, especially. I have a metaphor to describe love and mind. It's like when you go to the cinema and you get into the room. The guy with the projector is your mind, and the screen is your heart. And sometimes I just feel that all that is in the screen is what the guy is projecting. Mm. Did you understand?
Yeah, I understood, but I don't think that's a very good example. Because our heart is, like for example, this very short phrase I like to use is, being the self, right? Being... Originally it was be the self, but then I changed it to being the self, because we're actually being, we're constantly changing. So we can't really be the self, because be the self is like static. So being the self, it's a very simple phrase, being the self. And when we talk about the self, I think we can also talk about the heart. It's made the same, maybe, I don't know. But the heart is like our instinct, right? It's our inner feelings, our subconscious mind. Maybe, I don't know, I don't want to create confusion, you know, because I'm also learning, so sometimes I may use words which may not make sense. But at least from my point of view, I think the heart is like a deep voice. It's a real voice inside us. And the mind is something that is affected by everything else around us. It's like the conditioning. It's a conditioner, something that's been conditioned. For example, when we are born, the first words we learn is papa and mama. My papa, my mama. That's like a conditioning already. First words, mine. So it's a little bit similar. Like the mind is like condition. It conditions actually our heart. So I'll see it like the other way around. Yeah, I mean, the screen is a heart and the mind is a projector. Mm. I mean, I think the mind affects sometimes, but we just follow the mind so much that we don't really listen to our inner voice. So I'm not very comfortable with the example you use because it can create confusion. But I think, yeah, basically we think too much. We give too much attention to our thoughts, which may come from outside also, which are conditioned. And the actual inner voice, we don't hear it or don't listen to it. And the best moment to listen to it is, for example, when we go into meditation, when we breathe deep, or even before going to sleep. Then you just breathe and you feel yourself and you try to stop thinking. I know that sounds very hard, but it's possible. You can start 1 second, stop thinking, turn off all the mind. One of the ways I like to use is like you become a stone. So you don't exist. Or you can like meditate that you don't exist. So then you can't think. If you don't exist, you can't think. If you're a stone, you can't think. Right? Or maybe you can visualize a scenario and the curtains are closing, the curtains are completely black, so then all the mind, all the images are like buzzing around and then the curtains close, then you can't see anything and you just like forget about what you're thinking. Or sometimes just concentrate in one point. You just concentrate on your breathing, concentrate on your heartbeat, or concentrate on some visual image you can make in your mind. But at least try to not to think. Actually, from my point of view, it's better not to have any visual images. And then, especially when you're before going to sleep, so then you can actually turn off the mind. And the longer you keep it, the better. Slowly, slowly, with practice. You know, it's not something that happens from one day to another. It will take time, but eventually if you can stop the mind for 10 seconds, then already that's a realization. And then from there you can keep going back to the 10 seconds. And in those 10 seconds you will hear the real voice, the inner voice, the true self, who we are, unconditioned. And that's why it's also good to do it before you go to sleep. Because that way you manually turn off your mind, and then when you fall asleep, you already turn off the mind. So normally, what people tend to do is you're just thinking. You can't sleep, and then finally you get so tired, your thinking stops, and you fall asleep automatic. And many times we can't sleep because we're thinking too much. So a good way to go to sleep is by turning off the thoughts. Just feeling yourself, listening to the inner voice, and then you manually go to sleep. And that way you're more conscious of falling asleep, because sleep is actually one of the best meditations. His Holiness the Dalai Lama says that. He says sleep is the best meditation. And also, of course, going back to what I was saying before, the melatonin is released during our sleep. So it's important also to sleep during the night time, because when there's light, the melatonin is not released because the senses are behind the eye. So it's important to have a good sleep hours, like you're doing now in the November course. I'm a late night sleeper. Sometimes I go to sleep at 2 a.m. It's very unhealthy. I don't recommend it. I'm trying to change that. That's one of the habits that I'm trying to change. But maybe it's a Spanish thing, I don't know, maybe it's a Western thing, or maybe it's a universal thing, I don't know. it's good to go to sleep early and get up early, so that you sleep in the night, in the dark hours, you know, the night hours, for the melatonin to regenerate, and also to have that schedule, you know, because when the morning time comes, and the sun comes out, it's like a ceremony, it's nature's ceremony. All the birds and the animals, they all celebrate the fact that the sun is coming up. So why shouldn't we also celebrate that? You know, why should we sleep in bed and just wait till the sun shines so hard we have to get up? Oh my God, it's so hot here.
So you mentioned be yourself, your true self.
Being yourself.
Being yourself, true self, inner voice. These are all things that come naturally to me, and I understand them. But here there's a lot of talk of no self. And that's difficult.
No self. Maybe that should be a question for Venerable Gyatso. Yeah. Maybe that's the no-self part is based on the emptiness concept. Of course, that's a different story. It's like, for example, there's different stages of learning. And like, for example, even in Buddhist philosophy, one of the first stages is, say, past, present. The past and future don't exist because everything exists in the present. So everything existence only exists in the present. That's what they say. Like Devadamam, but of course when you go higher up, when you study more the Buddhist philosophy, there's a certain point where it says past, present, future are all the same time. So it changes. But of course, in order to reach there, then you have to understand maybe the first steps. So from my point of view, I don't really know much about that. So I'm just sharing like what is practical for me, at least, what I can relate to, and what I think maybe all of you can also relate to. But because I'm in the process of becoming a Buddhist, I'm still studying, so I'm not qualified to really talk about that in that sense. And also I just want to say, please don't like misunderstand me or take me too seriously. You know, I'm just sharing thoughts, so it's not like you have to say, oh, you know, this is the truth, or just don't take me seriously. Just take what works for you, check it, you know, see if it's really true or not, if it makes sense, you know. And then if it's useful, use it. If it's not, just leave it. It doesn't matter. So, yeah. Any more questions?
I just have a request. I know you're a very busy person, but I would like to invite you, if you can come to our graduation on Tuesday, the closing of the... I think all of us would love to have you and be participant of our completing the course.
Okay.
You can come to the picnic and...
The picnic? Okay, sure. For sure. Definitely. Yes. I'll be very happy to do that. Thank you.
The question is, could you explain emptiness in your understanding?
My understanding is so small. It's difficult. I can't explain the emptiness, but I can explain some parts of emptiness, maybe, that I understand. I think, first of all, in order to understand or to start understanding emptiness, we have to realize that actually there's a lot of things outside, and what we experience. For example, a stone cannot experience reality the way we do. In other words, you know, like you can even almost say we're a reflection of the universe. Because through us, the universe kind of exists. I'm not sure if you understand that. It's, okay, so all reality is outside, yeah, it's happening. And then we are just a functional being who's experiencing it. It's happening. And in order to experience it, we have to have the five senses, for example, or any one of the senses. So basically, what we experience is inside us. It's our experience, but it's not necessarily what actually is out there. So that separation, it's like the dualism, you know? And then we are composed by many, many, many different kind of cells or atoms or, you know, like metabolisms. And all of those together create one, which is us. Because when we think, we are one functional being. We think as one. We don't think as many voices or many people, you know? It's like one. But that one comes from a composition. So I think those two things are like an introduction for emptiness. You know, to think about that. That's analytical meditation. To experience that. To think about it and experience it. Of course, practical meditation is very important also, but analytical is super important. So the two, to be combined is good. And that's kind of basically a little bit of the understanding I have of emptiness. I'm not sure if that. Okay. I have to come to the teachings also. Yeah. Okay, maybe one more question? Okay, two more questions. Love is suffering. He did say that? I didn't know it. So, yes, he just said that Gautama Buddha said that love is suffering. It can become suffering if it's not unconditional love. But I think maybe he referred to the type of love that, yeah, materialistic or samsaric people like us sometimes believe in. Not the unconditional love. I would very much doubt that the unconditional love is suffering. So maybe it's just a wordplay, you know. Just misunderstanding from the words. I don't know, I may be mistaken. Yeah, but good question though. It's good to question always. Very good to question. You have always to question. Always, always. Yes.
So the last time you mentioned being inspired by the words of Carlos Castaneda.
Yes.
And tonight you mentioned being influenced by the words of Carlos.
Yes.
Have you been studying Dharma from the Theravada group?
I see. Well, yeah, for sure. I'm very open to it and I would love to do that. But no, I haven't really studied from the Theravada point of view yet. One of the people also that inspired me was Krishnamurti, which I forgot to mention the last time. Because his life and my life are very similar. You know, so many times I identified myself with him. And he helped me a lot also to understand myself. Which is the main thing I've been trying to do since I left the monastery, was to understand myself. Yeah. Okay, so I think also all of you should do that. Should understand yourself. Yeah, so I hope I didn't create much confusion. And please, if I did, maybe you can ask me, or you can ask Venerable Gyatso. I'm sure he can clarify that for you. Please don't take me too seriously. No? Just give some freedom so that I don't get very stressed when I talk. Sometimes I talk, everyone's so serious, everyone's looking at me. I'm just joking. And you're all smiling, it's so beautiful. Thank you so much, I really enjoyed it. And it's beautiful to be here with all of you, such amazing energies. And please, please keep that energy going. Keep that purity. Don't forget what you learned here. And spread it when you go back to where you came from. Okay? And maybe see you next year. It's the November course. Maybe see you before that. Yeah, I know. See you tomorrow. So, thank you.